Oh my goodness, YouTube, TikTok, and people on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you might be listening to this. What's up? From a little studio apartment in Salt Lake City, still week two in Salt Lake City, it's People Pleaser. And it's me, Austin Archer. We're live on YouTube, we're live on TikTok, and we're maybe in your car right now as you're driving, listening to this on Spotify tomorrow, in the future, Friday, Saturday, I don't know. But welcome. We got Everett here on YouTube, because of course we do. What's up, Everett? He's saying hello, he's saying yodelehihu, that's what Everett does. We got people over here in the chat on TikTok that are watching. What's up, TikTok? How you doing? Somebody says, hello, I saw you in a video. I believe you. I believe that you saw me in a video. I'm in many of those. If you go on the internet, there's many videos that feature this face, the mustache, the whole thing. So I believe you when you tell me, hello, I saw you in a video, because I be making videos, you know, what can I say? Oh my God. I don't really have a lot of business to get through at the top of the show. I just kind of want to get right into what it is that I want to talk about today. I want to start like a new segment on the show. It'll be sort of like Review the Review. If this is your first time listening to the podcast, sometimes I do a segment called Review the Review, Review the Review. I'm not doing that today. I will be doing it. I'll do it again on another episode. But basically, Review the Review is like I read reviews that people write of the show on Apple Podcasts. You have to leave a 5-star review and then write the review and I'll read it on the show. That's how it works. This one is also one that I imagine at some point I'm going to make a sound drop for. If you've been here for a while, you know that it took me forever to make a sound drop for Review the Review. I kept saying I was going to make it, and I would sing it a cappella. I'd be like, Review the Review, Review the Review. And then finally I made that drop. This new segment I want to do is called The Bad Take Brigade, and I'm thinking the drop will sound something. It'll be like electric guitars, and it'll be like down down the Bad Take Brigade or something like that. I'll be like, oh, it's time for but down down the Bad Take Brigade, or maybe it's higher, maybe it's like but down down the Bad Take Brigade, and it's kind of like it's kind of like Axl Rose or something. The Bad someone on TikTok just said that's so extra. I think it'll just be a segment in the future where, like, if there's a particularly bad take that jumps out to me throughout the week that I want to comment on before I jump into the meat of the show, we'll do like a quick segment on it at the top of the show. But since it's a new segment, this whole episode is going to be the Bad Take Brigade. These are a bunch of bad takes that have been cropping up recently in the zeitgeist that I've been wanting to make videos about. Like, they were all, like, they all made my content list of, like, things I wanted to talk about in a video, and I just never got around to filming the videos. And they were also things that, like, every time I sat down to try to write a video about them, I was like, I got more than 3 minutes worth of stuff to say about why this is a bad take, and I don't know if I want to structure it in a way where, like, I take the time to script out my thoughts. I think this would be better on the podcast, shooting from the hip, going in on it, you know, doing the deep dive. Somebody on TikTok just said, you talking to me this whole time? Yeah. And the people on YouTube as well. And the people Spotify, wherever they are. Sorry. I think my brain started bleeding in the middle of that sentence. I'm back, though. Eric Pugh on YouTube said, I hate that Matt Walsh shares his name with a brilliant UCB comedian. Very prophetic, Eric. I hate that as well, but very prophetic of you to bring up Matt Walsh, because Matt Walsh just might be making an appearance at a certain point in this show. Let's get into these bad takes. We got a lot to get through. Let's get into them. Starting out our very first Bad Take Brigade ever, let's talk about Bill Maher. Good God. What happened? Was it me? Did I change? And tell me, chat, like, did I change? I liked this guy, I swear. I swear there was a point where I thought that he was, like, a truth teller and somebody who was calling it how he sees it and was getting in there and was doing things that other people on the left weren't willing to do. Was I just a young ex-Mormon who was leaving Mormon, you know, like leaving religion behind, and I liked the documentary Religious, and I was like smoking weed in college watching Religious going, yeah, hell yeah, man, take it to him, Bill. Like, and that's most likely what happened, is that I just changed. I can't stand this grifter douchebag guy anymore. I hate his program and his takes on pretty much everything, and I can't believe that, like, he has the gall to, like, identify as a liberal or anything left of center. He's just doing the same old, like, tired, you know, shock guy humor. It's the Dennis Miller effect. It's like how you just you don't like that people on the left are critical of some of your language, so you just become full-blown right wing. Because you're like, well, fine, if you guys are going to, like, tell me that I can't say anything I want, you know, without consequences, then I guess I'll just change all of my positions. But he's still, like, claiming that he's not doing that. He's still claiming to be on the left. So particularly, he has so many bad takes, and pretty much anytime I see a clip from his show recently, I'm like, God, this guy's a fucking idiot. But the worst ones that I've seen recently that really ground up my gears was the one where he did the new rule about how he hypothesized on the air that liberal states like California were creating trans kids. He basically went through and showed the study that a lot of people like looking at, especially people on the right, they like to freak out and act as though the sky is falling because of these studies that show over the last 40 years, like each decade, each generation has more people living out as trans or non-binary, living identities where they are identifying as using a gender identification that differs from what they were given at the hospital when they were born. And that's becoming more and more of a thing with each generation. And you're sort of seeing like this exponential growth factor. And as though, like, the thing that baffles me about this is that he presents this as though it's some kind of smoking gun to show that society's getting out of control and that the slippery slope is that in 50 years, no one's going to have gender anymore and everyone's going to be trans and everyone's going to be some version of trans or non-binary, and that it's not just simply what it obviously is, which is society is becoming more and more progressive and more accepting of alternative gender identities and gender identifications. And as a natural result of that, more people are coming out. What's crazy about this site when people study it is it's like, it's not a complex thing to break down. It's not a difficult idea to unpack. Literally in the segment, Bill goes, either Ohio's shaming them or California's making them. And he says that as though he's just said something remotely intelligent. And it's just so mind-blowing. Either Ohio's shaming them or California's creating them. Basically saying, why? Because he also says, if it's biological, why is it regional? So he's like, if it's just biological, if this is just how you were born, if you were just born into the wrong body, why is it regional? Why are we seeing more trans kids in California than Ohio? But then he goes on to say, because Ohio's shaming them. It's not difficult, dude. It's like, you just said it. You said it in the sentence. California is not making them. California is just a place where it's easier for kids to come out as being transgender than it is to come out in more rural areas, more conservative areas. This is not complex. As society becomes more progressive, becomes more evolved, becomes more accepting of transgender people, non-binary people, you see more people feeling comfortable identifying and from an earlier age. And then breaking it down reach. So that explains the why throughout time there have been more trans people. Again, not difficult, not at all hard to do. And then the regional explanation. If you are in a region that is more tolerant and accepting of alternative gender identities, you are more likely to see more young people coming out in that region. It's not difficult. Like, fuck this guy, man. And fuck HBO for continuing to let him have a show. Like, he belongs on Fox News at this point. He really does. Someone else said, Tim's widow on TikTok said, also, there are just more people in California. Like, I mean, that might be it too. I wouldn't be surprised if in these studies they're doing it like per capita. So maybe they are adjusting for population. But I think that I just think the problem is really simple. Someone, Death by Logic, who I can only assume by the, I'm not going to make any assumptions by the screen name, but Death by Logic here on TikTok says, so I fail to see your problem. My problem is that Bill Maher seems to be insinuating that the reason why there are more trans kids in California than Ohio is because California has some kind of liberal, progressive, woke agenda, and they are creating trans kids. They are teaching kids to be trans. They are recruiting kids to be trans. They're creating these kids with some kind of liberal, progressive curriculum in schools or something, or some kind of culture that makes, that naturally produces more kids, that it's artificial, basically, that it's an artificial creation of woke, progressive culture. That's my problem, is that's Bill's position, is that the reason why we're seeing more out trans people and more out non-binary people over time is because over time there's been this, like, that society has downgraded into some kind of, like, woke mob that is hell-bent on eliminating gender from the zeitgeist, like eliminating gender from the lexicon of human identification. And It's just such a like obviously confused take, like such an obviously transphobic and backwards and old fashioned take. It's like, it's just quintessential old man yelling at the sky, like old confused man who doesn't understand the new world and is just mad. So he's like, well, these kids are out of control. Anytime anyone tells you that anything used to be better the way it was before, like back when I was a kid, that person is wrong. Pretty much always. Anytime anyone's like, well, I think it made more sense when I was younger and you just were a man or a woman, and if you were trans, we just killed you. I think it was better then. I think that was better when I was younger. That it made more sense to me, at least. I knew who was who, and other people, we just sort of ridiculed them out of existence. We just sort of like bullied them until they stopped doing that. And if they didn't stop doing it, we sort of physically assaulted them until they stopped, you know? I think it was better back then. I think that it made more sense to me. Anytime anyone is talking like that, is confused about like a new element of society, where a new, like, society has progressed to a certain point where there's a new normal, we're embracing new things, and someone is like mad about that and wishes it was more like how it was back when, that person is 100% wrong all of the time. They've never ever been right about that we should go back to the good old days. The good old days don't exist. So yeah, that's my problem to that person who asked. I don't see what your problem is. My problem is that the idea that all of this is sort of artificially created by some out of touch woke agenda is wrong. It's not a difficult concept to grasp. It's just that society at large has become more accepting and more compassionate towards these people. And as a result, we're seeing more of them feeling more comfortable to come out and live authentically as themselves. That's it. And that's all there is to it. It really isn't deeper than that. And for Bill Maher to go on a national television show in front of millions of viewers under the auspices of being an intelligent person and wax philosophical about why this might be happening and posit that either Ohio's shaming them or California's making them. No, it's just Ohio's shaming them and California's not. That's it. That's it. Other bad take from Bill Maher. We're still on Bill Maher. We'll move on. But there's two. He gets two this week. Caleb over on YouTube says, creating trans kids, honestly, it's not like we have a choice. It's just who we are. People like that can fuck off. I agree with you, Caleb. I agree with you. And Eric over on YouTube says, trans gay people have always existed. They're just becoming more and more comfortable with being themselves publicly and even more importantly, privately. Yes, it's not difficult. It's not as deep as what's really going on here. Because well, back in my day, we didn't have all this they, them. It's just not that difficult. So this is another bad take from Bill Maher recently that I saw that just killed me. He thinks he's so fucking funny too. And I'm like, he was like, I like to tell people on the left that when what you're doing reads like an Onion headline, it's time to stop. The smarm on this guy is like his voice and his face look like they were designed by, if you went into DALL-E, you know, the AI that comes out with images, you type in like, Kermit the Frog, driving a NASCAR through a prehistoric jungle, and DALL-E shows you images of that, you know, or like, you know, Peter Griffin holding Homer Simpson dying on a beach on D-Day, and DALL-E will show you an image of this. You know what I'm talking about? It's an AI image generator. If you went in there and typed just like smarmy ooze, oozing smarm, it would just be four pictures of Bill Maher's face, and it would be a sound attached to it of him going, because that's his joke delivery. This is the cadence of Bill Maher's joke delivery. That's how Bill Maher sounds to me when I listen to his joke delivery. People on Spotify, you're really missing out by not being at the live stream because you need to be able to see my face. I'm trying to make it look like my face is melting off of my skull because that's how I feel like he looks with an eyebrow raised. And just come on, people. Can't we just blah, 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 blah? Can't we? Come on. I mean, really, the left is just out of the blah, blah, blah. That's my Bill Maher impression. And you're really missing out if you're not watching on YouTube or on TikTok right now. You're only getting half of the impression. But Bill Maher did this bit where he was like, I've been telling people on the left that when what you're doing looks like an Onion article, it's time to stop. And it was about people. Thank you for the cowboy hat. Someone dropped a cowboy hat on me on TikTok because my impression is so fucking good. I should be on SNL playing Bill Maher right now. I think that I mean, I'm not an impressionist, but I think I kind of crushed that just now. But basically, he was ripping on towns that are trying to do harm reduction with heroin. And if you don't know anything about this, like harm reduction is basically a process that many progressive liberal cities are trying to adopt. It's basically dealing with the epidemic, with the opioid epidemic, in a more realistic way, looking at it as a problem that we have not been able to make any headway on, doing it the way we've been doing it for 40, 50 years, just kind of villainizing people who use heroin and use meth and just saying you're a bad person if you do that, and if we catch you, we're gonna throw you in jail, but not really doing much else, kind of just trying to teach people, don't do it, just don't do it. And if you do it, then you're bad. Sophia the Dandelioness said, I'm so sad I just missed that impression. I have to just do it really quickly for Sophia. Basically, I was just doing Bill Maher going, I'm telling liberal people that when what you're doing feels like an Onion article, it's time to spin. Every time I do it, I'm going to be a little bit more like my face is melting off with one eyebrow up because I'm smoking some weed and dun-dun-dun. That's my Bill Maher impression. I'm getting better at it. Every time I do it, it's getting tighter. I can feel it really locking in. But anyway, he was livid at these billboards that were popping up in these towns that were trying harm reduction. Harm reduction is basically the process of acknowledging that people are using heroin, acknowledging that people are using drugs like meth, and figuring out how we can make it so less people are dying of overdoses. Reducing harm. Making it so that people can use these substances safe in a safer way. Acknowledging that they are using them, that making them illegal, that villainizing these people, that ostracizing these people, that making these people pariahs is not working, has not worked historically, and trying to find a way to help these people. And harm reduction has been shown to drastically reduce to drastically reduce overdoses, but also to show an increase in people getting sober. When people are treated with dignity and like human beings, when they're treated, when the reality of the problem that they're dealing with is being treated in a realistic way, and when they're being treated with compassion, they're more likely to seek help. But when the whole world just sort of casts them aside as just street trash and just sort of you're using these gutter drugs, you're using these gross, filthy intravenous drugs, and why don't you just stop? You can just hear Bill Maher going, I have an idea. How about you just stop using heroin? Huh? How about instead of trying harm reduction, people just stop doing drugs? And really, I can't stress enough that if you're on Spotify, you're really not seeing the full extent of how good this impression is. If you're not seeing my face, you're really not seeing it. But anyway, Bill Maher was just not having any of this compassionate harm reduction. And he thought, so there were billboards that were basically saying things like, hey, maybe try snorting instead of injecting, things like that, because these are things that are proven to reduce overdoses. Again, it's all about reducing harm, reducing deaths, and dealing with the problem in a realistic way, trying to tackle the problem in a different way, because the way that we've been trying isn't working. What's funny to me is that Bill is so, again, out of touch. Old, just old man out of touch who doesn't like the new world, that it doesn't even occur to, like, all he sees is progressive cities, liberal cities being okay with heroin usage. He sees that on a billboard. He sees, hey, maybe snort instead of inject because it's safer. And he sees liberal people saying using heroin is okay. When that's not what anyone's saying, that's not what's happening. People are saying, we understand that you are using heroin. We understand that some of you are, and that it's a big problem. We also understand that because it's illegal, you're forced to buy your drugs on the street, and you don't know if your drugs are cut with fentanyl or not. And we understand that it's a very dangerous situation that you're in. And we also understand that it's really difficult for you to just stop. So we're going to try to find ways for you to use your drug of choice without being at such great risk. And we're going to try to have centers, where harm reduction centers, where we can dole out healthy dosages to you and monitor you and make sure that you don't overdose if you want to use them. He sees this as madness, as just liberal woke madness, as the headline of an Onion article, you know, not realizing, for not taking a second to just think about the fact that we live in a society where the global drug of choice is alcohol, which is the most deadly drug in the world. It kills more people every year across the globe than any other drug by a wide margin. And we have all just wholeheartedly accepted that alcohol is just our drug. It's just the bee's knees. So Bill Maher sees a billboard saying, here's maybe a safer way to use heroin if you are a person addicted to heroin. And he thinks, absolutely not. That's insane. That's liberal madness. You're all out of your minds. But two minutes later, he'll drive by a billboard for Smirnoff vodka that says in tiny font at the bottom of the billboard, drink responsibly, and think there's nothing wrong with that. All that harm reduction is about is dealing with heroin realistically, the same way that we deal with alcohol. I even think that the way that we deal with alcohol is kind of delusional, that we just sort of treat alcohol like it's no big deal. And if you're a person who needs to go to Alcoholics Anonymous, it's because there's something wrong with you. Because, like, you're messed up. Like, alcohol is fine for everyone else. It's just doesn't work for you, but it's fine for all of us. No, it's a pretty massive, massive problem across the globe. It's a pretty massive problem in society. The fact that, like, that's our go-to drug and it's just killing people. Cigarettes too, says Slow Train on TikTok. Yes, cigarettes too. It's just pretty ridiculous to have that be your hot take on your show. Is like, and it just seems like Bill Maher's thing is anytime the world is trying to deal with old pervasive problems in new ways, he doesn't like that. And it's so weird because I'm like, well, what is the solution, Bill? Because again, it's this whole thing of, well, back in my day, you know, back when I was a kid, back when I was doing comedy clubs in the 80s, back when I was doing it, we just didn't even talk about people doing heroin. You know, it's like, does he think that it was better before people were trying harm reduction? Does he think that there's proof, that there's evidence out there that, like, that the opioid problem was being dealt with better before we were trying more compassionate avenues? It's so weird. I'm like, what is your position here? Because we're trying something new. We're just trying to deal with heroin usage and addiction in a realistic way. And you're like super miffed about that. You think that that's like a ridiculous idea. Eric on YouTube says, honestly, I think my appeal to Maher was his challenging of religious people early on. That's really it. In parentheses, also an ex-mo, not realizing you were until you said today. Well, I am. Hello, fellow ex-mo. And I think that's the same thing for me, too. I think I was initially attracted to his challenging of religion. I also think there was a phase I went through where he seemed like a self-identified progressive liberal guy, but who wasn't afraid to call out liberals for their legislative ineffectiveness, their inability to get anything done, their inability to play hardball and to fight dirty like the Republicans would. And I liked that. I was like, yeah, I think liberals should be willing to try to win by any means necessary the same way that the Republicans do, because if that's the way that the game is going to be played, then I guess we need to play it that way. So I do think that there was stuff that appealed to me, but lately it just all seems like bad old man takes. Just seems like angry old man doesn't like that the world is changing and that time continues to move forward and wishes it would stop. And that's really kind of all it is. Ooh, this is a good take. Lip Hughes on TikTok says, he's sort of a liberal Trump. He loves attention. It is sort of like that, right? If there was like a Democrat equivalent to Donald Trump, it would be more like Bill Maher. A big, loud, smarmy showboat who has a lot of bad takes, but the people who like him because he, quote, speaks his mind and tells it how it is, you know? That's a very good take. A lot of the people I know on the left who still like Bill Maher, their justification will be, I just like that he speaks his mind. I like that he tells it. I like that he's not afraid to say it how it is and to call people on their bullshit. That's really good. That, like, he still seems politically, from a policy standpoint, to be mostly, I guess, on the left. But socially, I feel like he's left, the left has left him in the dust. And he thinks that he's being some kind of, you know, stalwart for truth by holding his ground, but really all he's doing is something old white men have been doing for generations, which is refusing to acknowledge progress, refusing to, like, go with the flow of progress and being like, no, I progressed to a certain point. I progressed up until about 1995 and I got to a place where I was comfortable with it, and I refused to go any further. I already had to change my language several times in my lifetime and adopt several new norms. No more. I'm done doing it. But yeah, I love that. Liberal Donald Trump. That's a good one. That's really good. That's kind of it. I could do the entire show, I think, about how much I dislike Bill Maher these days. But let's move on. Let's go on through our bad take brigade and go on to the next bad take. Let's talk about Ben Shapiro. This is when you know you fucked up, if you're Bill Maher, is that, like, you're on a show where my bad takes include bad takes from Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, and Joe Rogan, and you, Bill Maher. That's the company I see you keeping these days. But Ben Shapiro recently, I mean, God, like, it's actually really hard to just pick a bad take from Ben Shapiro on any given week. So, like, Ben Shapiro probably will show up in the bad take brigade a lot. But one that I recently saw that I thought was just sort of hilarious is this Twitter tirade that he went on that was like 10, it was like a thread that was like 10 tweets deep of him losing his absolute shit over Fox News airing a segment about a trans teenage boy. And Ben Shapiro could not handle it. That his home, his propaganda daddies, his propaganda masters, Fox News, were going along with the woke agenda and confirming trans identities. He, like, the unhinged nature of this Twitter rant, I can't even describe to you. If you can go find it. First of all, it was like the first time in my life that I was like, wow, okay, Fox News. Go off. I was like, okay, all right, you got, I don't know how this happened, but also, like, it confirms so much what Fox News is and what people like Ben Shapiro see it as and what voters and people on the right see it as, which is, you are ours. You belong to us. And you talk about what we say you will talk about. You report what we want to hear. You don't just report any old story that you think is a good story. You talk about what we want you to talk about. And that's the thing where, like, I don't think people on the left necessarily feel that way about, like, CNN or MSNBC or NPR. I don't think I'm, like, on MSNBC and if they do a story that I don't necessarily jive with, I'm like, what a betrayal of me personally, this is, that MSNBC would do this story that confirms that, like, let's say that CNN did a story that was like critical of the Biden-Harris administration for not doing enough to make gas prices lower. Like, maybe the story is about how, like, yeah, gas prices are high across the globe, but as somebody on Twitter pointed out to me recently, it can be said that, like, American government has a lot to do with negotiating with the international petrol exchange and that we could be doing more to put pressure on them to lower gas prices. So let's say that CNN or MSNBC, like, aired a story critical of the Biden administration for not doing it. And, like, fair. I wouldn't be like, hey, you guys aren't supposed to be doing right-wing talking points. We got midterms coming up. What the fuck, CNN? How dare MSNBC do something that could give fuel to my political enemies during a very important time when we got we got elections coming up. This is just irresponsible journalism from my trusted news source. I count on CNN and MSNBC to be my arbiters of my propaganda. I want them to be spouting 24/7 propaganda that pushes my beliefs and my philosophy. And that's literally how Ben Shapiro, in no uncertain terms, phrased how he views Fox News, is Fox News has a responsibility to cater their message to him and people like him. And that anything outside of that is beyond reproach, or is unacceptable, not beyond reproach, is unacceptable from them. He thought it was just unacceptable of Fox News to run a story that basically acknowledged and affirmed the identity of a trans teenage boy. Couldn't believe they did it. Even though it's just a real story. It's just a real story about a real family. It's not made up. So it's not like, it's not breaking any ethical boundaries of journalistic integrity. It's not fake. It's not fake news. I mean, Fox News has plenty of fake news. They definitely run plenty of lies. Like, they have entire programs that do nothing but lie. They have their most popular show, Tucker Carlson, is a show that literally is just an hour of lies every night on TV, of just a guy who just gets on TV and just lies. But it's a story about a real family and a real situation where a family had a child that from a very early age identified as a boy and very clearly identified as a boy, and a family that chose to accept that and to affirm that for their child. It's kind of a beautiful story, but it's not made up. It's a real thing. It's just a profile on the modern American family. And Ben Shapiro lost his fucking shit over this. Could not handle it. Because to him, Fox News' job is not to report stories about the modern American family, regardless of if they're accurate or not. Fox News' job is to be a propaganda machine for the right wing. They are not supposed to show any stories or say anything that does not go in lockstep with right-wing ideology. He even said, yeah, this is a quote. So Trent Dalen went and looked it up on Twitter, and this is a quote from his, I believe, from his unhinged Twitter rant. He literally said this: Fox News is too important to conservatives to be weaponized on behalf of the most radical left. It's right there that he's just like, Fox News is ours. It's ours. We own it. It cannot be used to further any message that could help the left in any way. Basically acknowledging that Fox News is not a news network. Is not a network of journalists that report stories from the world. That's not what it is in his mind. In his mind, it is a tool of the right. It belongs to them. It is theirs. And when Fox News does this, they are stepping outside of that contract. Going back here on YouTube, Relief says, the moment Bill Maher used Gabby Petito's death as a talking point to tell all social media stars to get a real job, I was out. Oh, I remember that too. Hey, how about this? Get a real job, says the man who hasn't had a real job since 1985, whose job was stand-up comedian and is now TV host. I remember that segment. I was like, hey, Bill, you have the same job. Guess what, Bill, you old fuck? Guess what, Bill, angry old guy, angry old smarmy puddle? Guess what? The job that social media stars have is the same job you have. Isn't that fun? Just being a personality that talks to people, that shares ideas and thoughts, an entertainer, a storyteller. Same job, bud. Same job. It's not like you're a fucking accountant, Bill. It's not like you're a fucking garbage man. You're a comedian turned TV host. That's what social media is. It's the new TV. Having a popular page or a channel, a show on social media is like having a TV show. Having an audience that tunes in for that show. It's a show. Shane Now Look on TikTok says, was it Reagan who wrote into law that 24-hour news was legal? Why can't we just make it illegal again? I don't know if that's a road we want to go down. I think that we just more and more need to understand that the 24-hour news programs aren't, and this, it's not just Fox News, but like, aren't just news programs. They're not just there to say, here's what the weather is, and here are the biggest international news stories of the day. They're entertainment programs. They're designed. It's media. It's designed to keep your attention and to keep you watching. It's designed to keep ratings coming in so that they can continue making money. It's designed to be profitable. So this is just another thing that like capitalism has fucked up. I don't think that the solution is to like make it illegal to have a 24-hour news cycle. I don't know how that would work, and there seems to be a lot of ramifications that would come from that that go into like free speech, and I don't know. It's kind of like arbitrary. It's like, you know, FXX when they first came out would just do like 24-hour cycles of Simpsons episodes. I don't think that you can tell a network what they can and can't air. And once you're doing that legally and legislating that, I think you get into some tricky territory. So I don't know that that's the solution. I think that we, the populace, just needs to understand that like these aren't news networks solely. They do report news. They do. Even Fox News reports news in their way, but they're not solely news networks, you know? Yeah, Tara Nani on TikTok says, it's on individuals to not be sold the manufactured outrage they peddle. I think so too. And I also think that another good thing about social media, you know, talking about Bill Maher again, who's telling all the influencers to just get a real job, is that like, that is one of the ways that we can like keep them honest and make them have to compete with us. Is one cool thing that's come out of things like Twitter and even TikTok and Instagram is you have the rise of normal people, everyday people who aren't beholden to corporate interests, who are reporting up to the minute news. People who are on the ground, kind of independent freelance journalists of sorts. Like, so when there's like a protest going on and people are live streaming it and they're there and they're live tweeting it and they're giving live updates and they're not part of a network. They're not working for MSNBC or CNN. They're just a person who's there. Those kinds of things can work to keep networks honest, I think, in a way that didn't exist before, where like it makes it harder for them to blatantly lie, or at least it should, because you still have networks like Fox News that will just come out and just say stuff that like is demonstrably not true, because we'll be like, oh no, we have a bunch of videos from the thing that people took. People who were there on January 6th were filming live and posting stuff live to the internet. So like in real time, we were watching this stuff happen. So when you go on the news and say that it was a glorified tour, that it was basically people who were just, you know, kind of like angry people who were basically taking a tour of the Capitol, like we know that's not true because we watched it happen live on TV. Anyway, I sort of got away from Ben Shapiro, but mostly it doesn't really need to be belabored too much. Ben Shapiro sucks. He lost his shit because Fox News betrayed him and showed a story about a trans boy, and he didn't like that. But I think I wanted to talk about what it says about how the right views Fox News and how they view it as theirs, and that it is their tool that belongs to them, that it is their propaganda tool and not ours. Moving on. The Joe Rogan Experience. I need to make more of those videos. I made a video a while back about when Jordan Peterson was on Joe Rogan. Jordan Peterson, who will probably be a future Bad Take Brigade person. He's not on this episode, but he probably will be. But he was on an episode of Joe Rogan Experience, and he was talking about how climate change experts are. Their data isn't... He was like, well, their data is incomplete because climate. This is my... And I'm actually going to try here. Whereas the Bill Maher impression is an obvious exaggeration, I actually try with the Jordan Peterson impression because I think I'm kind of close. And I think I've got the spirit of him. And he's like, well, climate? I mean, what's that? Climate's everything. So if it's the climate, I mean, what are we talking about? But if you've got a data set that's just talking about clouds and storms, then that's not everything. Climate's everything. So we've either got to be talking about everything or we're not talking about climate. Because climate's everything. And it was just an idiotic take. whereas, like, what do you mean, Jordan Peterson, that climate's everything? You mean climate's, like, my mustache and this beanie that I'm wearing? And, like, I don't, like, what do you mean? Like, the rings of Saturn? What do you mean? Climate's everything. What does everything mean? Because I think it's sufficient for climate scientists. I almost said climate Scientologists because I think I was going to say climatologists, and then I was going to say climate scientists, to just study, like, climate-related things. Anyway, I did a video about that, and the whole video I kept having this sound drop that was like, the Joe Rogan Experience. And I think I need to do more of those videos just so I can keep bringing back that drop of the Joe Rogan Experience. And every time I do it, there's like an eagle that caws, and there's like electric guitars that are like, because that's how I view it, is like, it's a man show. But Joe Rogan the other day had one of his comedian friends on. I don't know who it was, that a guy that's regularly on the show. One of his friends that just like, anytime he calls them, they're like, yeah, I'll be right over. And they were talking about, this is a little bit old news. This is a little bit old news, but it was something that I meant to make a video on, and I wanted to talk about it in the Brigade. We won't spend too much, time on it, but, it was when Dave Chappelle got tackled by that guy on stage. They were talking about that. And, you know, and then Dave Chappelle's security team, like, beat the shit out of that guy and, like, broke his arm, and it was, like, really gnarly. But Joe and his friend were positing that the reason that happened, the reason Dave got attacked on stage, is because Dave dared to talk about trans people. And then Joe has this take that's so bad. He goes, they don't even want to be talked about. That's the thing. They don't even, you can't even talk about them. He's like, it doesn't matter if you're saying a good thing or a bad thing. They don't want to be talked about, period. Like, all Dave did was just talked about trans people, was just acknowledged that they existed, and they freaked out. And his friend's like, yeah, you can't even say anything. And it's that tired old comedian, like white guy comedian take of like, well, you can't say anything anymore. You can't say anything. But they literally were like, what Dave did was just mentioned trans people in a special. And that's why this guy went up on stage and tackled him, because trans people don't even want to be talked about anymore. I'm noticing that a lot of these bad takes are centering around trans people. It is Pride Month, so there is that on my mind and in the news cycle. But yeah, I just thought it was such a funny and bad, first of all, just a tired, unoriginal take from two white comedians on a podcast. Like, it's so funny to me how lacking in self-awareness people can be sometimes, like in that setting where it's like, you're two white comedians, white male comedians on a podcast saying you can't joke about anything anymore these days. Like, you couldn't be more of a stereotype if you tried. You're literally like saying the lines from comedy sketches about this situation. There are comedy sketches about white comedians talking about how you can't say anything, and you're saying the lines. Like, you're doing it. How are you this unaware? But so it's just, it's a bad argument, but also it's just a massive straw man. It's just a massive misrepresentation of what actually happened. It's such a disingenuous thing to say all Dave Chappelle did was just mentioned trans people and people freaked out. Trans people can't handle being talked about, because all Dave did was just talked about them existing and people freaked out. That's such a misrepresentation of what happened. That's not what happened. People were specifically asking Dave Chappelle, a beloved, again, a person I'm a fan of. I did a whole episode about this Dave Chappelle stand-up special on Netflix. I did a whole episode about it and my thoughts on it. You can go listen to that if you want to know more of my thoughts on it. But a person I'm a fan of, all he was being asked to do is like be a little bit more considerate with his language and consider that there are areas of life where he might have blind spots, that he might know a lot about the experience of being black in America. He does know a lot about that, and he can communicate a lot about that, but there might be people who experience marginalization in a way that he doesn't know enough about, that he hasn't done enough work to know enough about these communities to speak about them in a considerate and compassionate way. And I understand that it's comedy and that it's meant to push boundaries and that it's meant to push the envelope. But also, I think to do that properly and to do that where you're showing respect is to do it in an educated way. And there's like basic things throughout this the special where Dave routinely refers to the community as the LBGT community. And whether he's doing that on purpose to sort of make a point that like, look, I don't care. I know that it's supposed to be LGBT, but what I'm saying to you is who cares? It's just an acronym. Why are you guys getting so up? Whether he's doing it on purpose to make some kind of point about that, or whether he's doing it because he just doesn't know, either way, it's not good. I think it's because he just doesn't know, and it just signifies like he doesn't know enough to know that there actually is a specific order that those letters go in. That it's LGBT, and if you want to keep going, QIA+, if you want to keep going. But like he doesn't know like very fundamental things about the community, and all people are asking is, can you be a little bit more considerate with your language? And he's like, absolutely the fuck not. How dare you criticize me? And does an entire hour and a half long special about how people shouldn't criticize him because he's Dave fucking Chappelle. And it's just not a great look, you know? It's just, it looks like a guy who's out of touch. It looks like it looks very Bill Maher-esque. It looks like you made too much money, you got too successful, you lost touch. What's weird is he seems to understand this principle perfectly. And I talk about this on the podcast where I went into the special, but like he stopped doing Chappelle's show on Comedy Central because he noticed that people were laughing at the wrong things. He was trying to satirize racism and racists and show the ridiculousness of racists and racism. But what happened is he was getting all these like white college guys as his fans who were laughing at the wrong things. And he was realizing that like even his best efforts to point at a problem were being taken the wrong way. And so he stopped doing it. So he understands how jokes can be misheard and how people can be laughing at, rather than laughing at transphobia and the ridiculousness of being bigoted against someone just because of their gender identification, they're laughing at trans people and contributing to negative stereotypes about the trans community, which is what his jokes wind up doing a lot of the time. And that's all people were saying to him. So for Joe Rogan to go on his show and go, all he was doing was talking about them, it just leaves out like so much context. It's such a disingenuous way to talk about it. And then to just be so unoriginal as to be a buff white male comedian on a podcast going, well, we can't talk about anything anymore. Come on. Well, I can't say anything anymore. Like, could you be less original? Could you, like, come on, you know, at least have a better way of getting at the conversation than that. I was talking about this with Brave Dave on his podcast recently. You should go listen to the episode I did with him. It's called The Price of Content Creation, the Brave Dave podcast. Good podcast. And I like Dave a lot, but I just did his podcast and we were talking about how, sometimes when you're arguing with people on the right, the arguments that they come in with, you're like, I don't even want to respond to that because it's such an old, tired slogan. I can't believe that you think that what you just said is like, it could possibly be the first time I've ever heard that or could be anything resembling an original idea. Like when you're talking about, you know, like you're talking about like gay marriage and somebody says, well, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. And you're like, I can't even begin to argue with you because you just said a slogan that you read off of a fucking like Christian welcome mat one day when you were like 15. The fact that you said that to me and thought that like I'd never heard that before or that you were the person who came up with that, and the lack of self-awareness that like you don't understand what a tired, old, bad argument that is and how many times that's been thoroughly taken apart. I don't even want to go down this road. I don't even want to begin with you if that's what you're going to come out the door swinging with. So like, yeah, when you're coming out on a podcast being two comedians talking about how it's not fair that you can't say anything anymore, it's like, boy, you're starting off from such a laughably stereotypical place. AtheistJ12 on TikTok says, when can we shit on Ben Shapiro? We just did that. You missed it. We just did it. I mean, if you got something you want to say mean about Ben, by all means, drop it in the chat and I'll read it. Maybe. Mastermind Media 05 on TikTok says, we need to be adult enough to take a joke if we joke on others. Yes. Yes. I think that this is also, I think this is a little bit of a more nuanced take, but it's still the same straw man take. The idea that the trans community is incapable of taking jokes about themselves or incapable of laughing about themselves. If you know any trans people or have ever met like any trans comedians or followed any trans comedians, like you would know that this is not true. You need to watch more comedy by people in the queer community, by people in the LGBTQIA plus community, or just by people who like know what they're talking about and like know how to like write a joke in a way that is inclusive rather than just being like, rather than just like teasing a marginalized community for like the things that they are literally killed for. That's a different thing. So the insinuation with your comment is that people in the trans community can't take a joke. And that's the problem that they have with Dave Chappelle's special, is they're not capable of taking a joke. And if you want to tell jokes, you need to be able to take a joke. It's not that no one can take a joke. That's not the problem. It's not that no one can take a joke. It's that the jokes themselves, the way they're being written, are A, not funny, which is a huge, huge criteria for whether or not I'm going to like your comedy special. Again, big fan of Dave Chappelle, huge fan. Another person on this bad take brigade is Ricky Gervais. So we might as well, while we're talking about this topic, I might as well also say I watched Ricky Gervais's special and I found it terribly unfunny. And I'm a huge fan. I love the show Afterlife. Going through a breakup, watching Afterlife, I sobbed like a baby in my living room. I mean, obviously, the creator of The British Office, like Extras on HBO. I am such a big fan of Ricky Gervais and his work and his comedy and his writing and his voice. There's so many things in the past that I've really, really lined up with and that I thought were bold things to say about the way that he criticized religion and the way that he unpacks belief and things like that. But lately, he's straying into angry old manville. And out of touch millionaireville, where he doesn't like that there are things that he doesn't understand. And to him, it's just, can't you take a joke? They're jokes. And that's sort of like his punchline for a lot of his stuff, is like, oh, come on, it's a joke. It's a joke. Oh, come on. I can't do an impression of Ricky Gervais. I won't even try. I shouldn't have tried. I feel bad that I just tried. But Catalina Gearbox on YouTube says, anyone know any trans jokes from the right that doesn't involve us dying? Exactly. And whether it directly involves trans people dying or indirectly involves them dying, it's like, it's either contributing to the things that make the world dangerous for trans people, or it's directly just saying, like, you shouldn't exist. It's, and, you know, literally just contributing to harmful structures, societal structures that are harmful to already marginalized people, and calling it a joke does comedy a disservice. Because, yeah, I watched the Dave Chappelle special and I watched the Ricky Gervais special and I didn't laugh. And I didn't laugh because I'm not capable of taking a joke. I fucking love jokes. I love jokes. I love a good joke. A great comedy special about why jokes can be hard to take and why jokes are complicated, but why jokes are great is Thank God for Jokes by Mike Birbiglia. You should go watch it if you haven't already watched it. It's on Netflix. Thank God for Jokes by Mike Birbiglia unpacks how he has lines in the special, like, it's really hard to write a joke that's not offensive to anyone because every joke is offensive to someone. And there's a lot of truth in that. There's a lot of truth in that. That, like, even if you really try to structure your humor in a way that's very thoughtful and considerate and compassionate, there's going to be someone somewhere who's going to think that even just the fact that you're talking about a certain topic in a comedic lens is inappropriate. So there is truth to this. There's nuance to this conversation. But when people boil it down to, you just can't take a joke, and they ignore the fact that, like, the quote-unquote jokes being told aren't funny. Yeah, Catalina on YouTube says George Carlin's still funny even after his death. I agree. But to boil it down to, well, I guess we can't say anything. That's an oversimplification of the thing, of the problem. It's like, no, you can say anything. There will be consequences for your words. There will be people whose feelings are hurt. And the great example that Mike Birbiglia uses in the special is he was hosting some award show and he had to tell jokes about the people there. He's not like a roast comic. That's not what Mike Birbiglia does. He doesn't roast people, but that's kind of the gig of being the host of an award show. So he was having a really hard time writing jokes because he was really afraid of offending these people who are like these filmmakers that he really admired, people he wanted to work with. But he was like, I don't think I can do a good job as a comedian. I don't think I can do a good job as a host and an entertainer for the night if I don't write jokes that I think are funny, knowing that the people they're about might not like them. And he wound up telling a joke about David O. Russell that he thought was really good, but David O. Russell really didn't like. And David O. Russell kind of famously has a hot temper. And the point of the special is just to say, like the joke that he told was true. He was talking about something true and talking about something real that David O. Russell did once and pointing at something real. And it's uncomfortable, but it's real. And it's also like cutting through the discomfort of it and making other people laugh about something that's difficult and hard, you know? So jokes are powerful. They're a very powerful means to talking about things that are hard to talk about. And they're a very powerful means to sort of strip harmful language of its power. If you can satirize the position of people who are subjugating marginalized communities, and if you can show them for how ridiculous they're being by showing them in a satirical light, there's a lot of power in that. I think that everyone is capable of being joked about, and everyone is capable of taking jokes about themselves. It's all about how you present it, you know? But when you boil it down to you can't take a joke, or we can't say anything. It's an oversimplification of the thing. Someone on Jilly Bean on TikTok says, your mic isn't working. You have to plug it in. Au contraire. The mic is plugged in. There's a cord right here. You see that? So you see the bottom of this and you don't see it plugged in. It's plugged in right here. You can't hear what the mic is doing because you're getting my audio coming through my phone. But the podcast people over on Spotify right now, you don't even know it over on TikTok, but right now, the sound just got real up in their ear. So if they have earbuds in right now, it got real right up in their ear right at this part, is what's going on. So it's actually working great. Doom Moon Creations on TikTok says, it feels like they are losing their relevance, so they say inappropriate things to gain attention. That is what it feels like. It feels like something that just keeps happening with comics as they get older and as they get more out of touch, or maybe as they feel they're losing relevance. And it feels like this sort of like being edgy or shocking thing. But what's the most disappointing thing for me about all of it is just that it's not funny. Is that people I like, Dave Chappelle, Ricky Gervais, people whose comedy I'm a fan of, are putting out specials that aren't funny, that are just full of them sort of ranting about things in the world they don't understand, and in a way that doesn't make me laugh. And I'm like, I want you to do your job and just make me laugh. Tara Nani says, yes, it's the victim mentality. Just accept there are consequences to essentially everything. Yeah, it's weird that people who they know that comedy exists to push the envelope and that jokes will have the potential to be offensive to someone no matter how carefully you craft them, and then they freak out when someone has an issue with something they said. It's like, well, that's what it is. That's the gig. You're pushing and probing. So you need to just deal with the fact that there's going to be backlash always. Neuromedia says, at first I was thinking you were holding a coffee mug, not a microphone. Kind of looks like that. Normally I'm not holding it. I'm just out of town, so I'm holding it in my hand. We got one more. We got one more on the Bad Take Brigade. I want to get to it, and we'll wrap up the show with this one more. The epic bad take. The biggest, baddest take of the bunch, okay? So far we went through Bill Maher, Ben Shapiro, Joe Rogan, Ricky Gervais, and we even threw a little Dave Chappelle tangentially into there. He was kind of bundled into Joe Rogan's, and so was Ricky. They were all sort of a bundle of, you know, edgy comics. But the biggest, baddest take currently, I think, out there is Mr. Matt Walsh and his god-awful documentary, What Is a Woman? Woo, Nelly, conservatives think they got they think they got something here. You can just see it. They are so stoked on this documentary. They really think that they've got that, like, this is like the big gotcha moment. That this is it. That they're like, we got you now. We got him. Matt Walsh went out and slam dunked him. And it's just, what a waste. What a waste of an endeavor. So again, we focused a lot on this episode on trans identities and different people who have bad takes on trans identities. Happy Pride to anyone out there. Happy Pride. I love June. I love Pride Month. But boy, of course, Matt Walsh dropped his documentary on to coincide with the first day of Pride. You know, he's gotta be an asshole about it. You know. Because that's it can't just be an intellectual experiment. And that's the entire documentary. The entire documentary is Matt Walsh going around asking bad faith questions to different left-wing thinkers and philosophers. But asking questions that he already believes he knows the answer to, and asking them in a very leading way where he has no intention of actually listening to them or considering anything that they're saying as potentially having merit. But he says it, he gets interviews with all of them under the auspices of the fact that he's just seeking, quote unquote, the truth. He's just looking for the truth, and he just wants a simple answer to a simple question: what is a woman? The funny thing about the documentary is, without knowing it, the question gets answered over and over again in the documentary. People keep answering the question to him. They keep responding to him and giving him an answer to his shitty, bad faith question. They keep telling him, what we're coming to understand in modern society is that it's not a binary answer. It's not a simple. It's not a simple set of finite characteristics and definitions. It is more fluid than that, since gender is a social structure, meaning something that is defined by social performances. We perform gender socially through different roles. We have traditional gender roles that we are fit into that dictate everything from our hairstyles to our skin routine to our skincare routine to the bathing products we use, our clothes, our jobs, our professions, the way we present our voices, the way that we talk, the way that we like the musicality of our voices. It's all a performance of an idea of what gender is. And it's much more complicated than penis or vagina. It just is. And that's what we're coming to understand. And that's why there's more out trans people now than there used to be, going back to the first bad take of the show, Bill Maher. But people answer this question, this complicated question, and Matt Walsh already has the answer in his head that a woman is, as he defines it in the documentary. And this is, I mean, God, they're all so bad at thinking for themselves, because now all over the internet, conservative logic boys who watched the documentary are in chats about gender, dropping the line from the documentary, a woman is an adult human female. Like, again, what the fuck does that mean? But they think it's like such a succinct, gotcha, smart definition. A woman is an adult human female. That is it. And they think, so the idea that they have is that the left is out of control, that they've left reality behind, they've lost their grip on reality, and they've lost the ability to just say something simple like, what is a woman? The problem that they don't understand from the outset, that Matt Walsh makes an entire documentary because he doesn't understand from the outset that it's not simple, that we have left the world behind where it was simple, that we never actually lived in that world, that was an illusion, that we created that world. We created the illusion that there was a binary between men and women. That there was a thing that is a man and a thing that is a woman, and it is a clear-cut binary. That is an illusion that we made. We created that. It's like asking the question, what is marriage? Well, marriage is whatever we say it is because we created it. But these people would go, no, it's a union, a legal union between a man and a woman. That is definitionally what it is. Remember, that was the argument back when gay marriage was being legalized, is not wanting to go to the Bible because they knew that the Bible was a very flimsy argument. They would look desperately for any kind of secular argument. And the secular argument that they would usually come up with is they would just go, well, I mean, we're changing the definition of a word here. Definitionally, marriage is between a man and a woman. It is a civil, legal union, legally binding union between a man and a woman. That's just definitionally what it is. And we're changing, as though like that's a good reason to deprive people of rights, of like basic human rights and dignities, is like we would have to change the definition of a word if we did that. So like, sorry, our hands are tied. It's not like we write the dictionary or anything. It's not like we create words and what they mean. Words are just something that exists outside of us, and we have no earthly power over them. They just are what they are, and we are powerless to change their definitions. Not that we actually had to change the definition of the word marriage. The word marriage has been ephemeral and fleeting and changing kind of throughout human history. Like, marriage has always meant something different throughout different generations and different chapters of humanity. So this idea of getting hung up on like, well, I'm sorry, just we need to clearly define what the thing is. It's a smokescreen, bad faith, red herring argument meant to distract from the fact that these people just don't like gay people. They don't like gay people. They don't want gay people getting married. They don't want gay people having the same rights as them. It's the same thing with what is a woman. It's all of this hand-wringing and red herring and bad faith argument to try to go, look, I'm just trying to get... And he's so earnest in this fucking shitty documentary. He's so earnest about, I'm just looking for the truth. I'm just trying to get a clear answer to this question. What is a woman? How come no one can just answer this question for me? And it's such a gross thing, because at no point in the documentary is he anywhere near being sincere about that question. Is he anywhere near being sincerely curious about the answer to that question? He already knows the answer that he's looking for, and he's there to show how stupid the people who disagree with him are. And he does things like, while people are answering the question, he'll like I've only seen a couple clips from the documentary that people have shared online. And in both clips, he got absolutely rolled. The question was answered. He asked the question of someone far more qualified in the field of gender studies than he is. And the question was answered, but it just went right through him, because he was already sitting there knowing the answer that he wanted and knowing that they weren't going to give him the answer that he wanted. So he wasn't listening to a word they were saying or being open in any way to potentially learning something new. At no point in the documentary, while he's doing this sincere, good faith search for a simple answer to this question, at no point is he even remotely open to the possibility that he might learn something new. He starts off on the quest completely certain that he's got the right answer, and he finishes the quest with the exact answer he started with. It couldn't be less of a compelling narrative. Like, what a fucking waste of time to even bother watching that. But he does things like, I've seen a few clips from this documentary, and he does things like, while a very qualified, more intelligent person is explaining to him carefully what they think a modern definition of a woman could be, you know, going through the fact that like, it's not really clear, it's not concrete and defined or binary, and explaining what a social construct is and how social constructs are malleable and fluid, and taking the time to explain the nuances inherent in that question, he does, you know, like little comedic, I'm putting that in quotes, editing tricks, like where he does the thing where he sort of like crossfades throughout their talk to make it look like they're talking for 30 minutes and he's just patiently listening and waiting for but he doesn't actually show the audience everything that they're saying. He edits out big chunks of what they're saying and crossfades to a later point in the explanation, then crossfades again to a later point in the explanation to make it look like this person is just spewing out this very long, convoluted definition that no one could possibly understand. And then at the end of it, he just goes, okay, so you can't just answer the question. You can't just tell me. Even though they just did that. That's what they just did. And they're like, understandably frustrated at this point. And they're like, I think I just did. And I don't think you listened to a word I said. And he's like, no, I'm just asking a really simple question. They're like, yeah. And I'm trying to tell you it's not a simple question and it's not a simple answer. And that's the answer to your question. The answer to your question is it's not simple. It's not clearly defined the way that you want it to be. That's the answer to your question. And he just refuses to be satisfied by that answer and makes an entire documentary about it. A documentary where he has no growth. He makes no grand discoveries. He doesn't learn anything new because he didn't intend to learn anything new. He intended to show that people on the left are crazy people who think that a woman is some weird, ethereal, ever-changing, evolving thing, you know? And he's doing all this under the auspices, the bad faith auspices of protecting actual biological women and children from the trans agenda. But really, again, it's all just a smokescreen for, I don't like trans people. I'm transphobic. Trans people make me uncomfortable. I don't like it. So I'm going to try to catch you in this ridiculous lie that you're peddling. But yeah, so that's Matt Walsh, you know. Catalina on YouTube says, a woman is anyone that identifies as a woman. I mean, that's a pretty simple way to put it, right? You know, if he's looking for a simple definition, that's a pretty simple definition. A woman is anyone who identifies as a woman. But inside that definition are extra questions of like, well, how does that work? And then you have to get into the idea of like the societal construct of gender and how it is a performed role in society. Yeah, it's so interesting. And he goes into, of course, you know, bad faith territory, like, well, if I said that I'm a black man, could I just say that? And people think that's, again, these are old arguments. They're not new. They're not original. People think it's such a smart gotcha argument. It's like, no, and no one's arguing that. There never have been throughout history. There's not a long history of transracial people. That's not a real thing. It's a straw man. It's an argument no one's making. There are people like Rachel Dolezal, who's like identity, but like it's such an outlier case, and there's so many factors into why she did that, that it, like, trans identities have always existed. There always have been trans people throughout history. There always have been gay people. So when it's like when people bring up like, well, what's next? Are we going to let people marry animals? And it's like, no, the argument always has been consenting adults, two consenting adults who are in love with each other should be able to marry. I personally believe that it should be two or more. I'm fine with however many people want to get married to each other. That's fine. As long as they're adults, consenting adults, I think that that's fine. But that's always been the argument. Oh, and Caroline said, have you seen The Rachel Divide? And then said, OMG, read my mind. I have not seen it, but I imagine it is about Rachel Dolezal. And I think that's a whole other issue. I think that's a whole other thing to explore. That's like, what happened with that particular person that gave rise to that situation? What kind of benefits was she seeking in her situation that, like, that, you know, there are different elements to that. It's just a different thing than what transgenderism as we understand it in a modern context is. Historically, there has not been a struggle for transracial people to be acknowledged and accepted, you know, like that just hasn't really been a thing. But you know, you can find a single outlier case of kind of anything. You know, you can find cases of people who would love to marry a horse or an animal. You can find those people who are saying, I would like to marry this animal. Most of us in progressive culture and on the left are not saying people should be allowed to the vast majority are not saying you should be allowed to marry an animal. We are talking about two or more humans who are human adults who are capable of consenting to that kind of relationship. And any other arguments are just meant as distractions, red herrings, smoke screens. They're bad faith. They're not, you know, but it's all to get around the real thing, which is just, you don't like trans people and you don't like gay people. You don't like that you're seeing more trans people and more gay people in your movies and your TV shows, and you're screaming at the ever-changing world, and you want it to be more like it was when it was okay for you to openly hate these people and to openly abuse these people, and where your way of being and the way that your family is and your relationship is was the norm. Someone just said on TikTok, states exist that allow child brides and marrying cattle. Yeah, that's the funny thing, isn't it? And they're red states. Who was it that just did that? Was it like Oklahoma or somewhere that they just passed a bill allowing child marriage? And it's like, was passed by Republicans, who are always the people that are like, we're looking out for the kids. We're concerned about the kids. We're concerned about the kids who keep dying in school shootings, but we're not going to do anything about guns. We are, however, going to make sure that they can't go to a drag show. Man, I wish that, you know, sometimes I do wish that they would just say it, that they would just say what they actually mean. I wish that Matt Walsh had just made a documentary called I Hate Trans People and just had him going around talking to gender studies professors and going, I hate trans people. Can you explain to me why I shouldn't? And them going, are you actually going to listen if I explain to you why you shouldn't? Like, are you actually open to learning? And then he goes, I'm actually not. I'm definitely going to hate them at the end of this conversation, and I'm not going to listen to anything you say. And then they go, okay, I think that we don't have anything to talk about then. And he goes, ha, 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 well, looks like you're not willing to have the conversation. Gotcha. And then walks out of the room. That would be a much more honest way to have that conversation. That would be a much more honest way to have that documentary. Hi, I'm Matt Walsh. I hate trans people. Can you explain to me why I shouldn't? I mean, I could tell you why you should be like a more compassionate, empathetic person, and why you should believe people when they tell you that their lived human experience is a certain way, even if it differs from your own. You should just take them at face value and trust them, and that like it doesn't really affect you anyway. I could explain. Are you open to listening to that? No, not in the slightest. I am very committed to being this way for the rest of my life because my livelihood depends on it. My entire audience is here following me, contingent on me keeping these views. So I'm not going to change any of my views. I'm not open to changing any of my views. So no. All right, then. I don't think that we have to have this conversation then. I don't think this is a useful conversation for us to have. Aha, gotcha. I was the open-minded intellectual willing to have the conversation, and you said no to the conversation. Which is the thing that literally happens in the documentary several times. Caroline says, this would be another great stand-up routine for you. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if that actually works as like a joke on stage. It might have legs, but I need like a jokey person, a joke writer to help me shape it, you know? Caleb on YouTube says, my family tend to beat around the bush when it comes to LGBTQ phobia, and I can't stand it. They act like they care about the LGBTQ members of my fam, but then talk about how much they hate LGBTQ behind their back. Yeah, it's just, I mean, whether it seems like it or not, it is progress that people can no longer be as openly vitriolic as they once were. It signifies progress, but it is frustrating to know what people mean and to know that they're beating around the bush. Abby O on YouTube says, I tend to agree there's no inherent problem with multiple marriages. Real can of worms to discuss, though. Yeah, I guess so. I don't really understand why. I feel like consenting adults, that's it. If five people all swear that they are in love with each other and all want to be married to each other, okay. Like, knock yourselves out. Rock and roll. This idea that, like, traditional, heteronormative, straight monogamous marriages between two people, a man and a woman, like have some kind of market cornered on like what marriage is and should be is so laughable. Those people have been fucking it up for forever. Like they've always had bad marriages and marriages that didn't last and marriages that didn't work out. So the idea that there's like something wrong with a plural marriage just because it goes outside of that norm is, it's just an unwillingness to accept realities outside of your own, you know, norms outside of your own. Caleb elaborates and says, it's the love the sinner, hate the sin thing. Yeah, I hate that. That's one of those old platitudes, those old things that if a person comes to me with that, like I said, the it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve thing. If a person comes to me with, well, I love the sinner, I hate the sin, I'm like, oh, you didn't come up with that. That's not an original thought that you had. Somebody told you that when you were like 12 years old and you just logged it away in your head and went, I'm just going to say that every time I'm saying some homophobic shit and I'm getting called out on it. And I'm going to go to love the sinner, hate the sin. And I'm just going to wipe my hands and do, you know. Bryce Rabbit says, who's a member of BPC. What's up? We love you, Bryce. And we also love Bryce Rabbit's content. You should go follow Bryce Rabbit's if you don't already. Says, I have a family member that still uses brokeback as a slur. Yeah, the fact that they will, even that is indicative of like finding any slur that's outside of traditional slurs so that you can still have plausible deniability if someone tries to call you on it and be like, hey, that's kind of a fucked up thing to say. It's like, what? It's the title of a movie. I don't know what I said. What did I say? You know? And again, whether or not it's fun, it is indicative of some kind of progress that people have to be more clever about it. Those are all the bad takes. That's the bad take brigade. This episode went longer than I intended it to, but we had a lot to get through, and I'm glad that we did. I'm going to wrap up the episode. If you want to keep hanging out on TikTok, we'll hang out for a little bit longer, but I'm just going to wrap up the episode here. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or by going to austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com, where you can find all of my albums, including a new album that I just put out a couple weeks ago, Beautiful Things, the deluxe edition. It's got 6 additional tracks and digitally remastered versions of the tracks that were put out in 2020 from the original release of the album, and it's got all my TikTok albums on there. AustinArcherMusic.bandcamp.com if you want more of my music. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you want to support the show, if you want to support the content. We're getting new Patreon patrons, and I love all of you new Patreon patrons. Thank you so much. Thank you to all the OG Patreon patrons. You are my favorite people in the world, right next to BPC. It's Patreon patrons on top. They're number one. BPC, which is Best Pals Club, over on TikTok. You can subscribe to my chat and be in the Best Pals Club. They're number two. And number three is anyone that subscribes to me on YouTube. You're number three. Number four is everyone else. Okay? You're still in the top five if you're just a casual follower on TikTok. You're still in the top five. But number one, Patreon. Number two, BPC. Number three, YouTube subscribers. Number four, actually, let's say number three, anyone who's ever bought an album on Bandcamp. Number four, YouTube. Number five, everyone else, okay? You're still top five. All right, that's it. That's the show. Thanks for hanging out. Thanks for the comments. Thanks for the thoughtful feedback. We love you so much over here. Don't know who we is. It's just me these days. I love you. Take care. Happy Pride. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. If anyone is gonna stay with you, that's not something you can control. The results are not your business, you know it's gonna happen on its own.